comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful planet we call Earth. Thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. And you know, it is the show where you matter. More media madness here in the United States of America. You know, we need to just quit lying about the way things are. I mean, we need to just tell the truth about how it really is. There is no freedom of speech in most of the United States of America. I mean, I told you yesterday about how it is now officially a felony for news reporters to get close enough to things that are happening in the Gulf for them to videotape it and to photograph it. It's a felony, $40,000 fine, and being a felony, it means there's at least 1 year of prison time, and there could be more. That's not freedom of speech. That's a violation of the First Amendment, and we need to stop lying about it. It's over, okay? The Republic is over, the Constitution is dead, and that's the way it is. And furthermore, now I don't want it to be that way, but let's quit lying about it. Let's tell the truth. Not only is it that way from the standpoint of the government, but even in major media, there is no freedom of speech. And we've seen evidence after evidence of this, and it makes a difference for this show. Out there in the media, if you say what you really think, you can be fired for it. Helen Thomas, of course, resigned her front row seat in the White House briefing room after making some comments about Jews, and she said that they should just leave Israel and go home. Maybe you disagree with that. Maybe you think Helen Thomas was wrong in her view, but does freedom of speech mean anything to you? Probably the toughest White House reporter in the history of White House reporting. She's one of the very few people that sort of kept presidents straight and held their feet to the fire. Well, Dave Weigel, who was a blogger for the Washington Post, he blogged for about the conservative movement, and some emails surfaced in which he insulted and ridiculed conservative political figures, and so he had to resign. Well, you mean you can't say if somebody is a maybe a conservative political leader, but if he's a certified USDA grade A moron, you can't say it? I mean, is that where we've come? You can't tell the truth? Octavia Nasser said something that I strongly disagree with, that was pro one of the leaders of Hezbollah. She was at CNN for 20 years, and she's been ousted. I disagree with what she said, but I totally support her right to say it. Let's quit lying about it. Freedom of speech is dead. as a follow-up to what I just said, and some of you are fired up now, you either agree or disagree, and that's a good thing. But as a follow-up to what I just said, you know, I talk a lot about how the media refuse to report to us the straight facts. They just don't do it. Unless, you know, I mean, we'll hear about Lindsay Lohan's court battles and 90 days in jail, or Britney Spears getting out of a car without her underwear on. We'll hear that, but we don't hear the straight news about the big issues of the day. And I say a lot about that. But, you know, in fairness, let's take a look just briefly at the people trying to report the news. They have to walk on thin ice. If they say something that upsets some group, somebody got their panties in a knot over it, they get fired. There's no freedom of speech. How could you expect them to report to us the truth? I don't agree with everything that gets reported. I don't agree with things that people say. But I strongly agree with their right to say what they think. And if you can be fired because you said something that caused somebody to get all flustered and upset, and you can be fired, you tell me, that is that freedom of speech? But here on this show, we do have freedom of speech. And we talk about things that a lot of people won't touch. We talk about a lot of things and a lot of ideas that many shows simply will not discuss. And, you know, sometimes people don't understand. They think, well, you had this guest on your show, so you must think like he thinks. Oh, grow up. Grow up. I mean, that's part of the madness. I have people on this show all the time who say things that I personally disagree with. You don't know it, and I don't say it. Because I believe in freedom of speech. We let them say what they want to say, and then we ask questions about it. Freedom of speech, folks. There are a few little islands of it left, but nationwide, tell the truth. It's over. It's dead. There are just a few pockets of it still in existence, and this is one of them. My guest tonight is Dr. Gerald Epling, and one of the things I like about talking with Dr. Gerald Epling is that he's willing to talk about some things that some people may consider to be way out on the edge of science, but it is most definitely science. And I think it is, in my opinion, it's really not on the edge. It's at the heart and core of where science ought to be. Dr. Gerald Epling, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thank you, Kevin. It's good to be with you again.
I apologize you had to live through that rant, but Lord, this is the insanity is taking over out here across, I guess across the world, but certainly across this land. And reporters getting fired for saying what they think. Let's see, reporters talking and being fired for not saying the right words. Yeah, that's not freedom of speech.
It doesn't make sense. It sounds like the same sort of logic that would shut down the internet.
Oh, well, that's coming.
Yeah, I've heard that.
That's coming. The morons that we elected to Congress have given dictatorial powers to the president to seize control of the internet for up to 4 months at a time.
When they control the communication, that's when things really start to go downhill.
This was, by the way, folks, if you will go to Google and do a Google search on this. Adolf Hitler's 25 points. You will see that what's happening here now is in those 25 points. It's the same plan. Did you know that, Dr. Appling?
I certainly did.
Yes, it is the same plan.
It is alarming.
It is. But along with all that alarming stuff, there's some really cool, interesting news from folks doing really important scientific research, such as yourself. And one of the things I like about your scientific research is it is absolutely just cool. It's fun. It's the kind of stuff where you can just start at one end and never make it to the other end because there's so much to look at. So I'm sort of like a kid in a candy store when we get into what you're doing and what your research has shown. For those who are new to the Kevin Smith Show and have not heard Dr. Appling with us before, let me tell you. Dr. Appling is a PhD, and his PhD has to do with, and you can correct this and put the right terminology in a moment, Dr. Appling, but it has to do with memory and how memories are formed and how they're retained and the research into where our memories are stored. And along the way, maybe not as a sideline, but just sort of as an adjunct research, he started monitoring the way plants respond to certain things and monitoring them with sophisticated scientific equipment. And when you, Dr. Appling, first started coming onto the show and talking about those experiments, we had some deep conversations about whether your experiment showed that plants have consciousness or not, and we talked a lot about the nature of consciousness. Deep, deep discussions about that. Do you remember that?
Oh, I remember every one of them very well. Excellent discussions. Enlightening, engaging discussions.
And if I were a betting man, which I'm not because I never, ever risk what I know I've got to have, but if I were a betting man, I would bet you disagreed with some of my views and concepts on consciousness.
We're getting closer together as time goes on, I think.
In the beginning, though, you disagreed that plants were conscious.
Yeah, I was. I wasn't clear on what I was seeing. I knew it was something to do with a mind of some sort. I don't subscribe to the Gaia hypothesis, so that was an unsatisfying answer. It has some problems. But I do now subscribe very comfortably to the hypothesis of there being a created universe, which I was comfortable with before, but that there are some beings that created this universe, and their consciousness appears to permeate the universe. The more I work with this, the more I think I'm looking at that level of consciousness.
Morgan, you're familiar with Morgan Freeman, the actor?
I'm familiar with the name, but...
Morgan Freeman is the tall, slender, and now elderly black actor who, in one movie, he plays the role of God. Let's see, that movie was Bruce Almighty with Carey. I can't think of his first name, the comedian. His last name is Carey. Morgan Freeman, he was also in, doesn't matter. But I watched a documentary hosted by or narrated by Morgan Freeman. I watched it last night. It's excellent. It talks about science looking for God. And then he goes into, look, there's all kinds of definitions of God, but what we're talking about is whatever is this unifying principle that holds it all together, and science looking, various types of science looking for that. And it was absolutely fascinating. But I hold to this view, and I don't hold to it religiously. It's just the view that I think is correct, and if I'm shown something that shows me it's not correct, I'll change. But I think consciousness just is. And that it does not necessarily have personality. I think consciousness just is. And whenever we talk about do plants have consciousness, that's the wrong way for us to say it. It's the wrong way I say it that way, but it's the wrong way. You don't have consciousness. You are consciousness. You're an expression of that consciousness that just is, as is all the universe, an expression or a manifestation of that consciousness. And therefore, when we who have personality to go with our consciousness, when we think things and express things, it reverberates throughout the consciousness and throughout the universe and everything else, because everything else is a manifestation of consciousness. If it's tuned in, can receive that reverberation and respond to that reverberation that we've caused. Now, I don't know if you would agree with that, and maybe you do, maybe you don't, but and I'll give you a chance to tell us what you think about it, but I think plants, you've proven with your research, with your experiments, that plants respond to our thoughts, and I think that's an example of what I just described.
The data is clear. The plants respond to our thought. They respond to the well-being of other animals in the area and to the actions of other plants, to insects that attack them, to birds that fly overhead. Consciousness is definitely something associated with life, and the consciousness can be in so many different people that you know it transcends personality. So I totally agree with you there. It has to be something that transcends personality. I link it to life, and life is still difficult to define.
Mm-hmm.
But we can measure a plant's response to different things. By example, we had a drought here, I believe it was about 2005, sometime in the fall, winter, it came on. And I noticed that the plants that I was monitoring just were not as active as they were 3 or 4 months earlier in the summer. And I began to worry about my equipment, so I checked all my equipment out. The equipment was fine. I looked at my plants, and I thought, gee, maybe I'm not giving them enough water. And no, the water was fine. And then we went into a drought, and that drought lasted a really long time. I remember it was around May of 2006 or 2007, somewhere in there, that I was monitoring some plants, and they started putting out lively responses. And it had been very dry, so everything was dry here. And the plants were all of a sudden sparking up and responding and sending out signals. Then we had a sort of a mist that came through. It didn't actually rain, but the humidity was quite high, and there was a mist that gathered on the leaves of the plants. And they, again, relaxed. Anytime you water a plant, or my experience has been with the plants here that I work with, when I water them, they relax and there's less of a response. And I knew that that was probably the beginning of the end of the drought, and sure enough, we came out of it. The plants were responding again, and they were happy, appeared to be what passes for happy in a plant world. I like to think of them as happy. But oddly enough, in June, probably starting about the 10th of June and going forward, I noticed what looked like a slowing of the responses of the plants, but it wasn't as pronounced as the graded response, lack of response going into the drought. When we went into the drought, you could pretty much draw a straight line and went from active to less active over a 30-day to 90-day period. 90 days, it was down toward the bottom of the activity level. But this was a more sudden drop within a period of about 10 days from roughly the 10th through about the 14th, things were slowing down. And then on the 24th, I monitored some of the plants, and they just were not putting out activity. They should be. The water levels were right for activity. I would have expected normal plant electrophysiology, but it was not there. and I don't know what was going on exactly, but I do suspect that it may have been connected to the BP disaster in our Gulf.
That's what I wanted to ask you about, and I had mentioned this to you when we talked on the phone. Did the plants give us any kind of response? Did they do anything that we can look back and say, okay, if we had just paid attention, this would have been predictive of some great disaster about to happen? Did they give us any kind of response like that beforehand?
Yeah, I did not monitor them beforehand, and I do not monitor them on a regular basis. I had to cut that program out. So I don't know if they gave us anything beforehand. I personally have a bit of a sensitivity to them, and when the plants seem different, overly active or less active, then I'll pull my monitor out and monitor the plant for a period of time to see what's going on. I do not know about the predictive ability. I have no data as far as whether they could have predicted that wellhead was going to blow or not.
The reason I wonder about that is because in our very early conversations, perhaps even the very first time you were here on the show, when you told us about how they respond to people's intentions.
Right.
And we had talked about that this could possibly, with the right equipment hooked to it, be useful in protecting us against terrorist attacks. Give you a kind of a early warning that something's up.
Yes.
Now, it seems also to be non-local. In other words, you don't have to be standing next to the plant for the plant to sense your intentions. And you gave us the example of a plant that you had outside that you started just thinking, okay, I'm going to burn you. And the monitor started going off. And so this plant's not in right there with you, right? Okay. We have to step away for break. Apparently he didn't hear me. But we'll step away for break and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back. And Dr. Epling, what I was saying is that your research shows that this ability of plants to respond to our thoughts and our intentions, it's non-local. They don't have to be right next to you, right?
Right. They can be at great distances. There's one example that Cleve Baxter offers in his book Primary Perception of a woman who has given a sample of her white blood cells, basically, and she's miles away when she has a very emotionally engaging experience, and that shows up in the sample back in the lab. I found with the plants, I'll get responses from them. There was a response of the plant I was going to burn in the backyard when I was in the kitchen. You mentioned that earlier. That was a strong response, a very clear response. And I looked for intentional things that might have a link that could cause the plants to respond to bad things. And I did find an article that was very disturbing, but it's traced back to a source called Catherine C, the number 8, at youtube.com. And apparently this is a lady who goes and interviews people about how things are going in the BP cleanup. And on or about the 13th of June, she interviewed a captain of a vessel who was there to try to get sea turtles out of the surf before they lit the oil and started burning it. And he was denied access, and he claimed that many of the turtles were then burned. I understand that some of that has changed, and now they have people that are actively going back out and getting the turtles. And this was just one report.
Well, we'll never know for sure because the government has made it a felony for the journalists to go out there.
Yes, and that is sad.
Mm-hmm.
But I do take comfort in the fact that the plants are starting to respond again to normal stimuli. We've had a couple of inches of rain here in Dallas in the last 2 weeks, which is unusual for this time of year, and it's been in the 90s. The plants are starting to respond to the water in a much more normal way, and they're becoming more active electrophysiologically than they were up until the first week of July.
Now, they responded around the 24th of June.
Yeah.
And you said you think it has to do with the BP oil spill. They responded basically by just going silent, right?
Right. Essentially just flat.
You know, it really sounds like they're doing some sort of quantum communications.
You know, it may be. There are two ways that people generally look at that. One is they're having quantum communication and they're updating. And another way is that it's very difficult information for the plant to intake, and it has sort of a protective mechanism where it shuts down and doesn't process that information. So it could be either one. It is interesting, though, in a way, that the answer is found in the silence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, you're in Dallas, Texas, so you're roughly, what, 325, 350 miles from the Gulf?
Exactly. Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. And then once you get to the Gulf, it's another 300 to 400 miles over to where the BP oil spill is.
Right.
So you're roughly, we'll say, 650, 700 miles from the BP oil spill, and these plants are responding.
Right. Right. In my opinion, they are responding to that. I know of nothing else of that magnitude, of a magnitude so great, that would affect these plants.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, plants, even those folks who are not familiar with your research and maybe not even familiar with any of the research that has been done by various scientists on the lives of plants and what's really going on, even those folks notice when plants get under stress, because we can see physical effects. And the same thing happens to us. When we get under stress, there are physical consequences for that stress. Your whole deal with how memories are formed and where they're stored, and you know how we turn information into a memory, sort of falls right in with consciousness and stress. I mean, all those are ingredients in our lives, and it has to be part of your research. Do you do anything related to stress and its effects upon us?
I certainly do. There have been so many stressors since 2008. We've had problems with the economic system. We've had things like hurricanes, tornadoes, BP oil spill, and this affects people. It's going to cause them to have increased cortisol levels. They're going to have less solid control of the blood sugars that provide energy to the body. When a person gets stressed, the body takes on adrenaline. Adrenaline is released by the nerve endings and by the adrenal glands, and this is called adrenaline or epinephrine, and it really fires people up. The parasympathetic system releases acetylcholine and tries to calm the body down a bit, But there's this excitement that overtakes the body. The pupils narrow, the person's tense, the stomach gets the order to digest whatever food's there and stop processing. The reproductive activities are shut down. Anything that is not important for immediate survival is shut down. And the blood flows to the muscles, and the brain becomes activated. And eventually, the pupils will pancake out. They'll get larger. And then the person is left with high cortisol levels. See, with the release of adrenaline, you have the tightening of the pupils and the stress induction. Then there has to be a reduction of the stress, or the person would die. The heart would beat too fast. Everything would go downhill rapidly at some point. And the body seems to know this. So it releases through the brain. It sends a chemical messenger into the blood that goes down to the adrenals and says, stop that. Let's put out some cortisol. But cortisol in itself keeps the blood pressure up higher than it would normally be. So here you've got all the stress, and you've got these problems. You've got people that if they go on with the stress for 10 years or more, they're going to have atherosclerosis, heart attacks, all sorts of problems. And I wondered, what can you do? I knew things that would be beneficial for myself, but I consulted the literature to see what might help. And now we have a medical dosage, a medically reliable dosage of walking that will help you control the blood sugars. Walking 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, for a year, has been shown to be roughly as effective as a pill called metformin. And so this is very important to people who have diabetes, but because we learn so much from the people who are at the edges of health, we know that this is also good for people who do not have diabetes. This is going to help people who are stressed, but they haven't gone into any sort of particular problem yet. Long term, they can reduce that stress by walking. You can actually help balance your lipids. The lipids will get out of balance. Also, we've all heard about these things where you go in and you see your doctor. He says, oh, no, I think you probably need to do something to reduce your triglycerides and things like this. Well, this is one way you can really control it. So amazingly, just plain old exercise is a really good approach to reducing stress.
All right, now let me ask you a question. And the two of these, you may think, well, that's, boy, he's asking disjointed questions tonight. But these two are tied together, I promise. I'll show you in a minute.
Yes.
Does a plant have any kind of negative reaction or response whenever it's about to be harvested for food?
You know, I haven't noticed a negative response when it's about to be harvested for food. They seem to be comfortable with that. They don't. I've actually monitored different greens that I've grown at the time that I would go out and pick the leaves. And as long as it's harvested for food and there's a reasonable end, it doesn't seem to bother it.
All right. Now, you know, I come up with some out there kind of theories when we're talking about plants and consciousness and so forth. So here's another one. And I really didn't know what you were going to answer, but I did suspect you would say, no, they don't have a negative response when they're about to be harvested for food. It would seem they are comfortable and not stressed whenever they are serving the purpose for which they exist.
Yes. Yes, that seems to be the case.
That may also apply to us. And that may be why walking is so beneficial, because we were not intended to sit on our fannies 10 hours a day in front of computers like I do. Well, I'm there for more than 10 hours a day. We're not intended for that. That's not our purpose. And we were intended to be active and working. And perhaps it is a return to purpose that lowers the stress.
I think so. And when you sit too much and don't get enough exercise, it can make it difficult to sleep, too.
Mm-hmm.
The number one health problem in the United States today is connected with sleep disorders. We lose about $100 billion annually in lost production, and about 70 million people suffer from sleep disorders. Walking, exercise, fresh air, and sunshine could help. But then there are the problems that plague us that can't really be cured with exercise and fresh air. People who are losing their homes must be horribly stressed. And then all you can do is apply behavioral techniques, all that I know right now. By example, if your hands are cold and your feet are cold, it's going to be more difficult to go to sleep. But if you can relax and let your hands warm up and your feet warm up, it will be easier to go to sleep. So some people put a little thermometer on their hands that shows different colors at different temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
And just look at that thermometer and try to make it go up just a little bit. And that can be one way that you can train your mind to help you go to sleep and to rest. And the important thing is to remember that whatever's happening today is not forever. It will pass. I think this is particularly difficult for children who have lived maybe 12 years. So 1 year is 1/12 of their life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if you're older, it's a smaller percentage. I don't want to go into just how small a percentage, but it's less.
It's a very small percent for me.
Yes.
But, yeah, and, you know, sometimes, you know, the way we perceive things, if we adopt an artificial construct of life, then when it implodes, that's going to cause stress. And everyone, I guess, would say, well, what do you mean by artificial? Well, you know, the possession of stuff, seeing that as important, is artificial. You were born without it. You lived just fine. You didn't have it. You were born naked. And you did okay. But it's an artificial construct for us to think that possession of stuff is all that important. It's fun, but it's not all that important. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Now, I was saying, Dr. Epling, when we went away, I think one of the great stressors, and in fact, psychologists tell us that it's a huge stress, is a sense of loss. And, you know, we all have stuff. I have stuff. You've got stuff. Everybody's got some stuff. But it's how we view our attachment to that stuff that I think determines the degree of loss we feel.
Well, I can agree with you on so many levels. There, the literature supports that if you have the ability to bounce back, if you can take a loss and not let it bother you too much, you'll live longer, be happier, and you know, lower blood pressure. You'll have a better life. The ability to bounce back is so key and so important. And you're right. A lot of it revolves around stuff and how people worry about their stuff.
And what does this have to do with plants? I think it's got everything to do with the fact that plants have not exhibited to you a negative response when the plant is about to be harvested for food. No plant wants to be just destroyed for no reason at all, and we know that from your experiments. They respond when you think, I'm just going to burn that plant. It responds. But if it's about to be harvested for food, hey, it's okay. It's okay. That's what I'm here for.
I did see a very interesting response from a plant when I had a crew out here filming a documentary. It was some time ago. But I remember I took the dracaenas out on the front porch, and I hooked them up to a very sophisticated monitor, and I had their signal on the screen so everyone could view it. And as the cameraman and the interviewer and the sound person, as they all got, you know, interested, they kind of crowded in, and the plant started producing a lot more activity, and it actually looked to me like it was just a little stressed. And it was as if it just didn't know what this was all about. I reached out and put my hand on the leaves and just moved them along the leaves, and the signal settled down and became much more steady. But it was interesting, and it didn't look like a horrible event stress. It looked like the activity was consistent. It continued for several seconds, and it was of greater amplitude than I would normally see, but there were no large spikes followed by very small levels of activity that you would see if the plant was threatened or felt really harmed. It seemed like the plant was somehow excited. It was very interesting.
Well, I think I know that we humans are much more complex organisms than a plant. And yet, at the basic level, we're made out of the same stuff. It's just organized different.
Alive.
Do what? Oh, I'm sorry, what did you say?
We are both alive. The thing that mm-hmm. we have in common with plants to the greatest extent is that we both share life. And there is the water element also, which has left some good opportunities for development of magnetic field manipulations.
How does that affect a plant?
I have found that I can take water and introduce a very strong magnetic field to the water. Then, while the magnetic field's in place, put some sounds into the water and some other varying electromagnetic fields that influence the water in a special way. And I can take that water and use it to grow cuttings of mint. The cuttings of mint that I grew in this particular water had very small roots. They didn't seem to need very much water to flourish and to grow. They looked healthy, they looked fine, but they didn't need very much water. In contrast, I took a sample of water that was untreated, and the roots in that water were much longer than the roots in the electromagnetically modified water. And also, I did other variations on the theme, but the way that I affected that water affected that plant over a year ago, and now I have the plants in the backyard, and they're showing the same effects. I've got the control plant that was not modified, and it's sort of a middle area of growth. It's maybe 6 or 7 inches. I have the one that I modified to be very satisfied, and it's a small plant, but it has beautiful leaves, very symmetrical. And then I have a plant that I modified to have some more stress in the water than any of the other plants, and yet to have some of this buffering effect that was soothing to the plant. I microwaved some water to boiling, let it cool, then treated it with the same method that I had used to provide very good nutrition, water nutrition to the plant, the other plant. The water that I treated with the microwaves and then subsequently produced electromagnetic waves in, it produced a plant that grows taller than the other plants. So it's like I have three levels of plant. Now I have the one I started with, the one that's smaller, and the one that's bigger. And that's gone on for over a year. It just keeps going on and on. It's just because of the way that I treated the water. When I drink the water that I've treated to be refreshing, I don't feel as thirsty. So there's something to this static magnetic field or a stable magnetic field. And some people have confused refrigerator magnets and stable magnetic fields from magnets that you can hold in your hands with varying electromagnetic fields. For example, there was an article that came out by Leanne Young and colleagues, edited and put into the publications of the National Academy of Sciences, where they talked about stimulating the brain. In experiment one, they put a 1 hertz signal into an area of the brain for 25 minutes, and then they would ask people questions to see if they were morally engaged more or less. They had a theory that they stimulated this area, then the people might not be so belief-driven. And by that I mean they would ask them that if you sent someone out to do something that could possibly be dangerous and they were not harmed, is that okay? And the people that had this particular area of their brain stimulated and essentially taken out of functioning said, oh yeah, no harm, no problem, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But the people that did not have that area stimulated said, well, you know, I think it's probably a bad idea to put people in harm's way, not tell them, even if nothing bad happened. But that was not taking the brain, that portion of the brain offline for just a few seconds or 25 minutes in this case. That was done with 1 hertz and later with 10 hertz, but those were varying signals. That was not from a stable magnetic field. So the stable magnetic field seems to make the water more pliable, more able to receive change. Then I find that it's very important to be careful what sort of change is introduced. There's a lot of interesting research going on with electromagnetic fields lately.
Is it possible that with all of the radio transmissions, television transmissions, cell phone transmissions, with all the electromagnetic stuff we're putting into the air, is it possible that we are introducing stress to us, and is it possible that we are deactivating part of what makes us what we used to consider more civilized?
It certainly is. One of the interesting experiments I've been doing on myself personally lately is I've got a very strong magnet, and I put some oak wood around it. I use oak because there's just something about oak that seems to give a more pleasant field. And this is the same powerful magnet that I used in the water experiments, and I've been using it various places on my hand when my hand gets a little tired, and I seem to feel some relief. And I began to think, now, with this strong of a magnetic field, it should block radio waves. So I thought I would just put it on my head and see how that felt. And I didn't really feel much of a difference, but I did feel perhaps less stress. It seems, you know, maybe there was a little less stress. So there are some interesting applications. And when you look at this non-local communication, I think about things that we don't know, and we don't really know very much about magnetics. We know about electrical fields, electronics, and electromagnetics go together. If you have an electrical field, you've got a magnetic field. But the money's been in manipulating the electronics, making the big screen TV, making the cell phone, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's generally done with electrical engineering. But the magnetics, you know, we've got a one-half of a Gauss field around planet Earth, and that's there all the time. And it wouldn't take much of a disturbance in the magnetic field, I wouldn't think, to carry a signal. I do wonder sometimes if there isn't some involvement of the magnetic fields in this non-local communication.
In other words, in quantum communication, quantum entanglement.
There is that, yes.
And you're saying that you think maybe the magnetic fields are involved in that?
I think so. I think there's a good chance they are. And that's the one thing that physics has not been able to do, is give that wonderful equation that ties electrical things and magnetic things and gravity. All those things, they're not tied together. Gravity's not well understood.
All right, we have to step away for a break. We'll be back right after this, and when we come back, we're going to open up the telephone lines for you. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Dr. Gerald Epling. And my sincere sympathy for those of you who missed the first hour. I'm truly, truly sorry. And you have my condolences for whatever it is that kept you away from universes of information. But I'm glad you're here now. And we're going to open up the telephone lines in just a moment and enable you to join the conversation. But before we do, Dr. Epling, I want to go back to the plants and the BP oil spill.
Yes.
Do you think that the plants are responding to the oil spill, or do you think they were responding to living things dying, suffering and dying because of the oil spill?
My gut tells me it's more to animals and things that are dying due to the Gulf oil spill.
See, that would I wouldn't think I could be wrong about this, but I wouldn't think that oil would be sort of connected with consciousness in the same way, or even at all. I wouldn't think it would be connected. But plants being living and consciousness, at least in my view, consciousness produces life, and consciousness produces the living things that we see. So I would think that they would be responding to what's happening to living things as a result of this disaster.
Right.
I wonder, can you think of any way that that could be tested?
The test would be rather macabre. I think I would just draw on Clete Baxter's earlier work, where he worked with small life forms and would perhaps boil them and then see the response. He had some brine shrimp or something that he worked with, and he would take the most active ones and then drop them in boiling water, and when they dropped in boiling water, he saw the response on his plant. One of the things that I had noticed way back at times when I was working in the laboratory of synaptic plasticity, we would put a rat in a particular vise and cut off its head and then break apart the skull and tease out the brain. But at the instant that the researcher would go down with a guillotine to cut off the head, I would see the plants have a bit of a response that was very interesting. And this later showed to be true when it was measured electrophysiologically, that plants were responding to the dispatch of animals in the area. So that is
So life is responding to life is what's happening.
Right. Consciousness is there and it permeates life. And plants just, they're not real keen on things dying.
Good for plants. That's a good thing. Let's go to the telephone. But before we bring our caller online, let me give the telephone number. 623-444-5889. That's our main number here. And you can call that number from anywhere on planet Earth and probably on planet X as well. 623-444-5889. Toll free in the USA and Canada, 888-223-4599. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hello, Terry.
Hi. You kind of touched on some kind of thing that I was thinking about, you know, as far as plants. And it's obvious that they can perceive and pick up wavelengths from people and stuff. And by the ways is there was tests, scientific tests made where sick people, a group of people would pray for a certain amount of sick people, and then nobody would pray for another certain amount of people. And it's been proven that the people that was prayed for had a better result than the people that wasn't prayed for.
Mm-hmm.
So with the knowledge that we're learning that plants have, could, you know, and over the centuries, plants and trees and leaves have mutated to resist certain animals or insects from eating their leaves by producing some kind of you know, nasty enzyme or something that they don't like. So I was wondering if we concentrated on the golf to these plants, could they be made to make some kind of bacteria or something to protect them and ward off the oil? Do you think anything like that could ever be possible?
Interesting idea. What do you think, Doctor?
You know, you've opened a very wide panorama, and I'm trying to wrap my mind around it right now. That sounds like a wonderful thing to have happen. I would look more towards the bacteria that people already have developed that will go and munch down on the oil and look for ways to enhance that bacteria. I'm all about enhancing the life that's around us. I'm less eager to. Well, I don't want to do genetic modification. Genetic modification is a term for gene splicing. Now, epigenetics is technically genetic modification, and I'm kind of comfortable with epigenetics. That's the type of genetic modification I like. That's where you make the one mint grow larger, another mint grow smaller. So I think that if you could find the beauty inherent in the different elements of the ecology and then enhance that activity, you could definitely make a big difference. And sure, prayer helps. Prayer changes things. And prayer would be a good thing. You could just pray for non-specific. You wouldn't necessarily need to pray for bacteria to go down there and take care of it, but just, you know, pray that the situation would resolve in a way that's best for everyone. That would probably be my approach to a prayer on that.
Okay. Thanks a lot. That's all I have.
All right. Thanks, Terry.
Thank you, Terry.
You know, as Terry was talking, the thought came to me about the shamans and, you know, various Native American shamans, as well as the old Celtic shamans and others. But they talked about the plants have spirits. And they would talk to the plants, and they would say, you have to let the plant talk to you. It will tell you what it can do. We're going to take a call, but I want to come back to that after the call and see what you think about can the plant talk to us. But let's take this call. And, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin from Phoenix.
Kevin from Phoenix?
Yep.
You're in Phoenix?
Near Medford in Oregon.
Oh, okay. All right, Kevin. What's on your mind?
I was wondering if plants respond more by mental thoughts or by actions.
What do you think, Doctor?
See, I understand the question to be something about...
Yeah, do plants respond more to mental thoughts and activity or to actual physical action?
Now that's a good question. It seems to be something to do with the electromagnetics involved. Anything that would produce a large electrophysiological activity in a person, like a really emotional event, would produce a large response in the plant. And in contrast, if we look at physical activity, cutting off a leaf of lettuce and eating it doesn't seem to produce a response. So I would have to say it's more the activity associated with thought than the activity associated with action, unless the action's, you know, really bad, like burning off the plant. Probably more to do with the thought or the intention than with the action.
All right, Kevin, thanks for the call. The main telephone number, 623-444-5889. Toll free in the USA and Canada, 888-223-4599. What about the shamans? The shamans, even today, say that you have to learn to let the plant speak to you, and it will tell you what it can do for you.
Well, you know, there's a reasonable expectation there. People who would go and test club moss on this continent perhaps 500 years ago might put their hands over the moss and see if the moss felt like it was somehow in tune with the person. And then some people got the idea, it's a good idea to eat certain types of club moss. And in this century, toward the end of the last century, it's been found that there are nutrients in the club moss that actually promote thinking and help the brain do its job, help us perform better and have greater clarity of thought. People were sampling ginkgo biloba sap long before it got put into a tablet. And they had to have a hunch somehow. And that hunch can be very good. But now I would definitely temper any hunch that one has with a good consultation with someone who knows the plants. You don't want to try hemlock. That would be bad.
Yeah.
And so you be careful out there. But if you have a hunch that a plant is good for you, why not research it online and see if that plant might not have something you want?
All right. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, John from Vancouver Island.
Hello, John.
Hi, hello, Dr. Epling.
Hello, John.
Hi. Are you aware of Dr. Emoto's work with
Mind very much
influencing
so.
Water?
Yes.
Yeah. Well,
have you seen the videos?
Not really, no. No, I've just read about it.
Yeah.
But here's what I'm getting at. Now, you describe using electromagnetic fields to shape or influence water.
Right.
And that makes a difference.
Right.
Yeah, so what I was thinking was if you were to use Emoto's method, using the mind, and from what I understand is it's just before freezing, and then the mental image or the mental intent will shape the crystallization just before freezing.
Yeah, go ahead.
I understand.
Yeah, go ahead, John.
Yeah.
Sound problem.
Okay, so
through.
What I'm linking this up with, years ago when I was at university, I came across the work of Ben Veniste.
Yeah, John, just go ahead and tell us what you need to tell us. You're going to run out of time.
Right. Well, okay, so what he was working on was that water had a memory, and he really went a long way towards that. So what I'm thinking is, if instead of using mechanical methods of generating magnetic fields, that instead you used Emoto's idea of the mind influencing water, and then also include the idea of water having memory,
right.
It seems to me you could really shape and influence quite a bit having to do with water within the living system.
Oh, you're exactly right. If you just look at how much water there is in the human body, it's way more than half. Plants, mostly water. People, mostly water. Things that go wrong with the body often have to do with water. When water doesn't come out of a cell and the cells start multiplying, we say it has cancer. If you could get the water to pass properly through the cell wall, you could perhaps combat that sort of a problem. And the water can be soothing. Swimmers sometimes say the water feels like it's fighting them, and other times they say it feels like the water's with them. And I felt that sort of a difference being in different waters at different times. I think there's a lot that we could do for life on planet Earth by working with the water and doing something with it. And that has been the focus of a lot of my research for the past year and a half. And I'm even working on a wellness product where I'm going to take the stable magnetic field that I've been using to affect water. Remember, the stable magnetic field makes the water acceptable. It accepts things. It makes the water agreeable to many manipulations that you might do. So my thought is, if I could get these magnets out to people and they could put them with their water and then sing happy songs to them, play classical music, great things could happen, because there are many changes that could be made to water that could be very beneficial. So I think you're onto something there.
Let me throw this into the equation and ask you about this. If electromagnetic fields are producing the effects that you're describing for us, which I certainly accept that they are, but assuming that's the case, is not thought electromagnetic? I know it's electrochemical, but is it not? If it's electro, it's electromagnetic. Isn't that right?
Right, that's right. If it's electro, it is electromagnetic.
All right. So if you got enough people together to call it what you want. Think, meditate, pray, all in with one purpose. You would be generating a pretty cohesive electromagnetic field out of that group, wouldn't you?
You absolutely would, and you can change the world. There are so many evidences of this. People who pray for other people can have an effect on their lives. And I think that is one of the things that people who want to manipulate other people try to disrupt. They try to disrupt the peace of the world. They try to disrupt the good thinking that people are having by making them agitated. When people are angry, then they're no longer as effective. The IQ apparently drops, and things go downhill from there. So, yes, if people can find ways to de-stress and to relax, and yet at the same time maintain awareness, vigilance, then the world will be a better place. I'm just so eager for people to become more aware of what medical research shows and what other people have shown in the various religious traditions, especially Christianity, on how you can make your life better and make life better for other people. And the memories that we have affect the things around us. They actually... The flip side of the coin is there's a thing called memory effects due to stimuli that you're used to. If you go into a room and you take a test every Thursday for a year, you get pretty comfortable taking a math test every Thursday in that room. But if it's a new environment, then you're not going to do as well. And I think that there's not just something that you get from the room. In my opinion, there's something you put into the room when you get there that helps make it more comfortable for you and perhaps more stable and less agitating.
All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and you're gone. Sorry about that. All right, when you call and I put you on hold, you can hear us talking in the background. That's your clue. You're in line to be on the air. Stay there, because if you leave, you go to the end of the line. 623-444-5889. Toll-free, 888-223-4599. Okay. Well, I was going to say something, but we have a call coming in, so let's go to the caller, and I'll hold my thought until after the call. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Yeah, hi, Kevin. It's Perry from San Luis Obispo, California.
Hello, Perry.
Hi. I'm really curious. I have my own ideas, but I'm curious to know... what Gerald's thoughts are about where is the mind that encompasses the consciousness of, I guess, all living things. With the plants, they don't have a brain. We have a brain. We're taught that our brain is where thought comes from, but a lot of people there's a lot of scientists that are studying this now and thinking that the brain is just a computer and that the real thinking occurs outside of the body. And I'm curious what your thoughts are about that.
Well, a couple of thoughts. There's a fellow a bit north of you in Stanford who looked into the differences between the computer and the mind, and what he basically discovered is it goes back to memory and how memories are formed and where you keep them, and I'm in agreement with that. And you're right, the plants do not have neurons. And neurons may not be, they're important. I don't want to say that this beautiful creation of God is not important. The brain is wonderful, it's great to have. But there are people who do very well in their life, and they seem to be on top of their game. And when they die, an autopsy shows they're maybe in late stage Alzheimer's. But somehow, they have managed to keep it together. So the brain's important, but it's not the total story. I think that's the key in what I'm trying to say, is it's not the total story. The mind that we have, I think that our mind reaches out to things that are in the area and affects things in our local environment, perhaps further away. I don't hold that the mind and the brain are mapped one-to-one onto each other. I don't say that the brain is the mind and the mind is the brain. And many people avoid this whole conversation, by just doing studies and saying, well, this is a behavioral study. We did this and we saw that behavior. But you go so far on behavioral studies and you just have to say there's something more going on. It's not well understood. I'm so eager to continue and continue doing things where people can do these tests at home themselves, get the results, and then apply their mind to it. And the more people we can get thinking about this, the quicker we can find answers. But I think that mind is in many ways non-local. I think it's a gift from God, and I don't think anyone really at this point understands how it works. And neuroscience is probably about 120 years away from getting better explanations that will come closer to just explaining how the brain works. The brain's an awesome thing, but it's not the whole story.
All right, Perry, thank you so much for the call. Interesting question, and you and I have talked about this. Where are memories stored? And the pretty good research shows memories are not all memories are stored in the brain. There may be some stored there, but they're not all stored there. Now, if thought is electromagnetic, then it's the activity of thinking is generating an electromagnetic field around our, at least our head, and probably our whole body.
Right.
Now, quantum physicists say that information is stored at the quantum level in the physical world. And when you change the information on one quantum particle, its entangled particle responds to the change. Therefore, people who talk about the Akashic Record just may be using a word to describe a field of quantum information that swirls about us. We'll talk about that when we come back. We'll be back, folks, right after this, so don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Dr. Gerald Epling. And Doctor, when we went away for break, I was talking about this. There's a lot of talk these days about the Akashic Records. And what they describe is all the information of the universe is out there. It's stored out there in what they call the Akashic Records. People that do remote viewing say that you can access any information in the universe by getting your mind into the Akashic Records. Okay, now, whether we agree with all that, or we disagree with all of it, or disagree with part of it and agree with part of it, what they're talking about sounds to me like a quantum field around all of us that contains the information that all of us have thought. And, you know, if it ever has been thought, then it's stored there. And maybe that's what they're accessing. But it's just possible, isn't it, that our memories are being stored in this field around us at the quantum level?
They have to go somewhere. We get them back. So, yes, maybe that's the case. As a scientist, I'm always careful not to do what you call over-defining.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's happened to me. It's happened to other people. You think you've got it. You go through and you find a factor and you do your analysis. And you say, oh, I'm counting for 98% of the variance or something. And then you find out two of the factors are really to a large degree the same factor, and so then you have to cut it back to, well, we'll just use this factor rather than that factor, so now maybe you're only explaining 60%. So it could be a quantum field that surrounds us all. It could be, and that's not a bad explanation, but I'm leaving it open until I can actually interrogate that field and get answers back, very precise, clear answers that are as easy to read as a paper in front of me or the computer screen or the newspaper. When I can get those back, then I'll be very much more confident. And the memory's there, so there has to be a way to do that. I don't know how to do it yet.
I would think, first, let me say, I am satisfied that experiments have been done, and I'm talking about with the highest standards of scientific investigation. Experiments have been done that show that there are people who do have what we call psychic ability.
Right.
I think if our thoughts, if our memories are stored in our brain, it would be most difficult for a psychic to be a psychic.
It sure would.
And I think whatever it is that a psychic is accessing is not local to the body of the person about whom they are accessing information. And therefore, it has to be stored in some kind of field outside of the person's body. Does that make sense?
That makes sense.
If they can access it, it has to be available in order for them to access it. And if I've got it locked in my brain, I don't think it's going to be very accessible to them. But if it's in a field of some kind outside of my body, then it's accessible to them, and then they can get the information. But see, I think, again, going back to the plants, I think your research with these plants has shown. Now, other scientists, you know, it's got to be peer-reviewed and all that. I understand that. But I'm not a scientist, and I can say what I think. I think your research has shown some of the most important core information about the entire universe that has ever been demonstrated. And if you can see that a plant shows that it is responding to consciousness, and if you can show that this plant, in one case you're going to burn it, in another case you're going to eat it, in the case where you're going to burn it, it has a negative reaction, the case where you're going to eat it, it says okay. You're showing that this plant has at least some level of, I'm going to use the word understanding, but I don't really mean that. But some level of understanding about its purpose, some level of being able to accept its purpose.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah, I'll accept that. So there is purpose there.
So that would indicate that if a plant is responding that way, and a plant is compared to us, a very simple organism compared to us.
Right.
But if a plant is having this sort of concourse with consciousness and purpose, then we are too. And if we are doing things consciously in our minds, in our brains, in our thoughts, that are contrary to our purpose, then we are stepping outside of the consciousness, or we are at least opposing the consciousness of the universe. And, you know, I can't think of a bigger battle you can take on than to fight the whole universe.
I can't either. I remember when Tiger Woods got the yips. You know, that's when you try to golf and you can't quite hit the ball right.
Mm-hmm.
I remember thinking about that psychologically and thinking he must have something sort of out of balance, something where where, you know, some people have a failure mechanism. Every time they get close to success, they cause themselves to fail. And that's probably an out of balance with their purpose somehow. Life's better when you go with the flow, and you know where the flow is, and you get in right in God's will for your life, and you go that way. This is the best life you can have.
Okay, now if we're fighting the universe, is it possible that the universe fights back?
It is possible. Swimmers will sometimes say that the water is fighting them. And I think that's just one example of when things don't go well. I have a very limited experience as just one human being and one life. But many times it's the people that oppose me that cause me the biggest stress or the biggest problem. And so the universe... Yeah, the universe is there, and a tree is a tree. You know, I look at different woods. I find oak works with these magnets. I'm not sure why oak works better than walnut or maple or these other woods, pecan. But it just does. So I use oak. And there are many things that you can do with the universe and with the things that are here. But the most difficult thing to overcome is the mind of someone who is not going to support you or do anything that would help you progress. That's hard to overcome.
Well, let me tell you where I'm headed with this now. You know how I am. I weave this thing for a while before we get there. Well, here it is. I often say that we are watching the current paradigm in its death spasms. And I fully think that's correct. I think we are watching the current paradigm in its death spasms. I think that when we humans start constructing any kind of any system for forcing people to do certain things, and I'm not saying that government is bad. We have to have government, but when we start constructing one. If, you know, to the degree that it is constructed in harmony with human purpose, according to the universe, according to consciousness, I think it will succeed. And to the degree that it is out of harmony with consciousness and out of harmony with the human purpose as the universe has determined it, to that degree, it causes strife, it causes war, it causes death, and it causes its own death, the death of the paradigm. And I think that's what we're watching. I think we're watching a paradigm that is way out of step with the purpose of the universe, and it's dying.
You know, that makes wonderful sense. You look at the way the markets are manipulated, the way gold and silver have been manipulated, the unfair weights and measures, the way people were induced to buy homes they couldn't afford and then become evicted and they're homeless,
mm-hmm.
The way people get greedy and maybe use their homes as an ATM and kept taking more and more money out. There's room in this world for everyone, but where we live tomorrow may be different from where we live today, and our ability to bounce back and adapt is going to make life really, really pleasurable and enjoyable. We are seeing the death of something.
I think we're seeing the death of the power paradigm. At least that's the way I view it. Let's go to the telephone and take this call. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, hi, Kevin. Hi, Dr. Appling. It's Brian from Burnaby.
Hello, Brian.
Hello. I was just wondering if you've done any experiments regarding, because some plants are symbiotic with other plants, and plants and animals, the bees and hummingbirds and such, are symbiotic with some plants, as well as the fungi. The mushrooms make chemicals for the plants, and the plants feed the mushrooms on their dead material. I wondered if you had done any experiments on the interchange between the various species as they interact.
The area of my research that has interfaced with that, there is a crossover, and it's sort of an interesting crossover. At one time I had used some Roundup, which is a glyphosate, to kill grass, and then I went back and tried to grow some plants, and at the time I was told that this glyphosate, you know, wouldn't bother the soil. I thought, well, we'll give it a try. But the plants were very unresponsive for about 3 years after I used the glyphosate. And what I found out also is that the people who had put in the garden had used many other chemicals also. So it was all kind of a problem. But what I found out also from some other researchers is that the glyphosate would go down into the roots and affect the little funguses and things that grow in there, which you're getting at, and it would actually cause them to perish and to not grow well. So I do see the symbiotic relationship showing up in the vigor of the plant. I have not actually taken any fungal or bacterial cultures, and I did do a bacterial, it wasn't with plants though, but no, I have not done any fungal or bacterial cultures with plants, studies of that way, but I have seen the health of the plants improve when there's a good ecosystem and when the mycorrhiza and all that, when it's not disturbed.
All right, we have to step away for a break, and Brian, thanks for the call. Very interesting question, something for thought, and it made me think of a question. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and to my guest, Dr. Gerald Epling. We are on Final Approach, and if you want to call, we would love to have you call 623-444-5889 or toll-free 888-223-4599. Dr. Epling, that last caller made me think of a question.
Oh, what was that?
Mushrooms. He said my favorite word. This is... mushroom is a term that I use for people who just don't think. They just allow themselves to be spoon-fed by the mushroom media.
Okay.
But let me say that fungi are living organisms, are they not?
Oh, yes.
Have you done any experiments measuring the responses of fungi?
No. I don't like fungi. I don't know enough about them to be really safe around them. I know there's, by example, there's several versions of Aspergillus, and if you get the one that grows well at your body temperature, you have a serious problem. So it's probably ignorance that keeps me away from the fungi. I've worked with some bacteria. Yogurt, not a problem. I figure anything that I can eat that's safe, I'll go ahead and play with or experiment with. And yogurt does have responses to things that are happening in the environment, so it's a valid thing to look at.
Well, that would give more weight to what I say. I think it would, that consciousness is, and that anything that has life is connected to consciousness because it was created by the consciousness.
And has that connection. The Creator is connected to everything.
So, even mushrooms are connected to consciousness. They're just not using their ability to think and to parse what's being said by the mushroom media. But as I said at the beginning of the show, who could blame these reporters if they can get fired for saying something? The only way they ought to be fired for saying something is if they report something as a fact when it's not a fact. That's called a lie, and if they lie, they should be fired. But if they just in their blog, they are on Twitter, they make some kind of statement that somebody disagrees with, oh my, they get fired for that. Well, that's mushroom media.
Correctness officer.
Do what?
Who's going to be the political correctness officer for the guy that's making a comment for the reporter?
Yeah, well, see, I don't think political correctness is constitutional. I think it is manifestly unconstitutional. It's a violation of freedom of speech. And I wonder if plants respond to violations of freedom, because I think, and I could be wrong, but I think freedom is one of those things that flows from consciousness.
You know, I think it would be reasonable to expect that. I have never set up that experiment, but I agree with you. I think that political correctness is anti-constitutional, but yet it's out there, and you don't even know whose political correctness you're supposedly being judged by at a given time. But that adds to the stress of the environment and the stress of people to keep us destabilized and more malleable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and you see, here's what it's connected to in my line of warped thinking this evening. If freedom flows from consciousness, if that's one, we're free because we were made free, not because a document says I'm free, but because I exist. Therefore, I am free. If it flows from consciousness, everything that is anti-freedom is anti-purpose of the consciousness.
I do believe that people have inalienable rights in life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, justice, freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure about animals, although I think you should treat animals nicely. There are fellow travelers here on this planet.
Well, animals and plants, every living thing should be treated according to its purpose.
That's a good way to look at it.
And, you know, if you treat it according to its purpose, you're not harming it, and it doesn't have a negative reaction, a stressful reaction. But when, that's why I was saying we're watching the death of a paradigm, because I think this paradigm has pushed humankind in directions that are opposed to the purpose of humankind, and therefore opposed to the consciousness, therefore opposed to the entire universe. And it creates stress whenever we're subjected to that which is not our purpose. And stress creates all kinds of bad behaviors and bad medical conditions.
It does. Yes.
When I throw all that stuff into the soup, as I have tonight, I think you can see why I say your research is right at the core of the universe. It's right at the core of where science all ought to be. It's where it all ought to be focused.
I agree. What could be more important than life and how life naturally proceeds and occurs and the spontaneity of it all? And it's not an error to have spontaneity.
Mm-hmm.
Life. And why not just look at it and study that?
And yeah, and enjoy it. And you know, we don't have to understand all the mechanics of how something happens in the universe in order to benefit from it.
Right.
You don't have to understand how to combine oxygen and hydrogen in order to make water. You don't have to understand that in order to benefit from water.
Yeah, there are people that make water that has a life-enhancing, in my opinion, life-enhancing characteristics that do that by mechanical means.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very complicated, expensive process, but it can be done mechanically. I happen to like to do it with magnetism, electromagnetic frequencies, and sound waves. And I don't understand exactly what's going on, but I enjoy it, and we can experiment with things within reasonable limits and find some really good things and make this world a better place. How long do you think we have, Kevin? I mean, if it's a paradigm shift and things are falling down, do you think it's going to happen within 5 years or two? Or?
I don't like to make predictions. I will say this. My son, who is 6 years old, will not be an adult by the time we're into the new paradigm.
I agree.
Yeah. And, you know, we've got a few pains to go through, some uncomfortable stuff to happen between now and the total collapse of the corruption that's infested the whole world. But it is going to collapse, and a new day is dawning. If this were a 24-hour period, if this whole paradigm shift were compacted into a 24-hour period, I would say we're at about 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the morning. The dawn is not far away.
Well, dawn is certainly something to look forward to.
Yeah, plants like it.
Yes, they do.
Dr. Epling, thanks for being with us. If you will, stay online with me here for just a moment as we bring the show to a close. It's been fascinating, as always. Anytime Dr. Epling is with us, it's deep and it's fascinating. Folks, we've got more coming this week, so you don't want to miss a single show. If you miss one single show, you're going to miss a real universe of information. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.